within the scriptures, there's a great deal that talks about the abundant life, about what God really wants for us, about the ways in which our lives have been diminished because we are in a dying and death scenario for those of us who do not know Him. And so one of the great messages that we have as believers, as Christians, to the world is that we know about life. And we know what God wants to save us to and not just save us from. So I have a little confession. I was going to finish my Memorial Day address message from last Sunday. And then Ruth reminded me that the Missions Committee had invited our speakers to come and talk about what it is that they do. So more or less at the last moment, I've changed my message a bit and will be speaking about life and death as it relates to children and infants. Now, I spoke about this about 2 months ago, and a lot has taken place within the culture in regard to this particular topic. So I want to address that some, but before that, I want to really get into the text a bit. Is this better? All right, thanks. Kevin's been back there waving at me, trying to get my attention and stuff. So, can you hear now, Bonnie? Okay, I try. Maybe they can hotify my mic a little bit more. So in any case, I want to talk a little bit about this text, the first text that Steve read as a part of the call to worship, and I just want to talk about it for a few minutes and then go on to another text. The scriptures are very clear that in the book of Genesis, in the first chapter of the book of Genesis, Genesis 1, 26 through 28, where God created man, and that He created man in the image of God, the imago Dei, that when He created us in that creation process, it's not like when we become adults, all of a sudden we've been made in the image of God. You see what I'm saying? It's not like when you become a sentient human being that now you have all of the attributes of what it means to be made in the image of God. That's not how the text reads. That's not the understanding. The understanding is that whatever's compromised, whatever comes together and forms the basis of a human being, that whatever stage that's in, it's in the image of God. Whatever stage. So it doesn't matter if you're 70 years old or 50 or 25 or 3. When the sperm and the egg unite, it creates a thing called a zygote. And at that moment, that zygote has everything in it that comprises a human being. Everything. And that everything is fashioned after the image of God. It's not a cat. It's not a silkworm. It's a human being. Right? And so Christians then, since the beginning of Judaism, have been very protective of that process, that life process. I'm talking to you about a 4,000-year-old tradition. Okay, it's not something that we just came up with, and that was predicated on this idea that God, it generates life, and the life He generates, He generates after His image. So we are for those of us who are pro-life, we are protecting image bearers. That's what we are protecting. That's what concerns us. That's what we want to have an opportunity to live and to make a contribution and to live in such a way that human being has every opportunity to take on the full measure of Christ. Not just not just the damaged part that comes with the fall, but that Christ restores everything to himself. Now, the second text I want to talk to you about is Psalm 139. And many of you are very familiar with this text. And when Christians generally have this discussion, this is the one that they oftentimes reference. So Psalm 139, beginning with verses 13 through 16. David records, as he's speaking to God. So David is writing this in such a way that he's speaking to God himself. He's saying, "For you created my inmost being, you knit me together in my mother's womb. You knit me together." And so I would ask you, if you knew that God was in the middle of a creative act, so let me ask it, no, let me back up a little bit further. Is there anything that God does that when he doesn't, it does not have profound purpose? Is there anything that God does that when he does it, it does not have profound purpose? Can you think of anything that God does that's kind of off the cuff, that's meaningless? Does God create anything that's meaningless, without purpose? Does God create anything that has of little value? Does he do that? No one's answering. Does he do that? No. Cicadas. Oh, the cicadas are cool. I have a million of them around my house. I know. So, food source. Yeah. And music. So, you know, the other day I was sitting in my swing underneath my tree, reading and studying. Occasionally I'd feel something go off my hat or something. What is that? You know, I'm looking around and I could see them on the tree, like, you know, coming out of their little exoskeletons and stuff. Well, here they were falling out of the tree and hit me in my head, and I didn't know that. Because if you looked up, you'd see clusters of them underneath the leaves, you know. So anyway, they were really cool. But you might be satisfied to know that I mowed my grass yesterday, and I probably wiped out about 10,000 of them. But So here's the thing. So if there isn't anything that God creates that has no purpose, no significance, then tell me just how arrogant it would be if God is in the middle of a creative act and we say, we're going to interrupt that. We're going to stop that. We don't like it. It's inconvenient. We're offended by it. It's parasitic to us. Would any of you dream, if you walked upon God creating something and you said to him, we don't like that. We're going to stop it. That offends me. Would you do that to God? For you created my inmost being. You knit me together in my mother's womb. I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Fearfully, there's a reverence. I mean, that's the implication of the word. There's a reverence to this creative thing called. And anybody who, I would think that most people who have seen a person. Look, when I worked on a farm and I saw a sheep give birth to a lamb, I thought it was a miracle. They come out like this, like they're praying almost, you know. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. And any scientist worth their salt that works in this particular area will say to you, it's just astounding the complexity that's involved in the birth of any kind of life, let alone that of a human being. Any scientist worth their salt will say to you that they're humbled by it. So I had many students when I was at Geneva who wanted to go into nursing school, and they studied a thing called embryology. When you were in pre-med, when Geneva had a pre-med program, they had weed them out courses like physics and science and biology and things like that. Do you know the course that made every one of them pull their hair out? embryology because it was so complex. It was so mystifying. I praise you because I'm fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful. I know that full well. He's not just referencing, I mean, there's a certain sense in which he's referencing all of his creative facts, but all of his created acts, but the context of what he says, this has to do with God creating life, and that life that he creates is wonderful. It's wonderful. Verse 15, for my frame was not hidden from you when I was made in that secret place, when I was woven together in the depths of your earth. So in literary studies, what we understand here is that to underscore his initial thesis, he comes back around and he restates it again. And so he's restating what he said two verses earlier in a more sort of kind of profound way. For my frame was not hidden from you, what you were making me, my body was not hidden from you when I was made in that secret place, in that womb, when I was woven together in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed body. And all the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. So as God is in the middle of creating another Imago Dei, he has in mind a plan for each of those children that he fashions in the womb of a woman. And the days of that child are ordained, that he has a plan for every one of them. And that either because, and for whatever reason why that child exists there, whether it's because we were careless or because there was an assault or whatever reason, God ordained that life. We can't create life. We don't know what all is involved, not even close. But God is the one that allows that child to be born, to come to life, and to be born. Now, about 2 months ago when I spoke on this, I gave an overview and some statistical kinds of things related to abortion. But I want to, anecdotally, I guess, share with you what's going on in the culture in this way, because I'm not a person that all, so this is only the second time since I've been here in 14 years that I've talked about this. But I think the stakes are pretty high. I think they're really high in terms of what is taking place. And some people might say to me, well, why don't you talk about other social concerns more? Like, why don't you talk about poverty, or why don't you talk about those kinds of things? Okay, fair enough, I probably could. But I do know this. I know that when a person is born in poverty, that their death is not insured because of poverty. But I do know that a fetus's death is insured if it goes into an abortion clinic. I do know that. So we have less time. The results are more immediate, more urgent. You know, the context of why I spoke about that in the first place was I was talking about Abraham offering up Isaac from the book of Genesis. And the question is, why would Abraham even consider that? Why would God even ask Abraham? And of course, it was a test. And so from there, we talked about how in Abraham's mind, for God to ask him to do that would not have sounded weird, because he was surrounded by Canaanite tribes who sacrificed their children all the time to a demonic god called Molech. It was quite common. In fact, Israel was supposed to be God's instrument of discipline and punishment on the Canaanite tribes because they worshiped their children to the god named Molech. But Abraham, who preceded that, saw that kind of thing all the time. It would not have sounded strange to him. But the great irony, and I made this point, was this, that when parents took their children to a Molech temple to offer, to give their firstborn as a sacrifice to the god Molech, they did it on behalf of the community because they were afraid of this demonic god and what he might do to them. So they willingly sacrificed their child on behalf of the community. As horrible as even that sounds. But we sacrifice our children to the god of convenience about 87-89% of the time. In fact, I want to say this to you, that the Canaanite tribes who offered their firstborn to the god Molech did it more altruistically. They would have been offended by what we do with the children in our womb today. They would have no understanding of it. It would completely befuddle them. They would be outraged that there would be a civilized people who would sacrifice their unborn in that kind of a way. Now, don't you find that to be incredibly ironic? That we consider ourselves to be more civilized, more advanced. So what's going on? Just recently, in the last few days, in Illinois, they passed probably the worst bill in the country. And so these are some of the reasons why it is the worst bill. This is why we're fighting for life. And by the way, I had to get some cheaters because I lost 2 pairs of glasses in less than 1 week. And I don't know what happened to them. But these are cheaters. And I never wore cheaters before. But all I can say is you're a bunch of smudges when I put this on here. But I need it to look. So if I squint, that's the reason why. And so here are some of the parts of that particular bill. HB 2495 would virtually eliminate all protections for preborn children. It would allow infanticide. It would remove conscious protection laws for healthcare workers. So if you are a nurse and you have a conscientious objection to this, you could not use that to keep yourself from having to participate in a procedure like abortion. You would no longer be protected by it. H2467 would repeal the parental notice, so your daughters could go without telling you, making it so that minors can obtain abortions without parental notification. The bills are so extreme that thousands of citizens flooded the Illinois State Capitol building in protest. Some other parts of that particular bill. I mean, among other things than the abortion itself, it just violates so many other things in terms of families and parents and all of that kind of stuff. So I was trying to get to the other part of it, and I may not have time now, but fathers in what way?
They have no rights.
The fathers have zero rights. Yep. Yep. So there's more to it, but just suffice to say, Illinois, where the city of Chicago is located, has the most extreme bill in the country right now. Now, there are lots of justifications, rationalizations about why people think this is necessary. The satirical site, the Babylon Bee, if any of you have ever read it before, satirically said, it says, close one. This baby was almost born into poverty, but his mother killed him in the nick of time. It's satirical, but you get the point, right? One Alabama politician said, some kids are unwanted. So you kill them now or you kill them later. Because his justification is that for the kids who are unwanted, they almost always become criminals who commit capital crimes or get themselves involved in where they get themselves killed, and so you might as well kill them now so that none of that happens. Honestly, I don't know where people get their critical thinking skills at all anymore. I just don't. I mean, I just don't. I mean, there are so many casualties in this battle, and critical thinking skills is one of them, right? I mean, anyway, it is. So now they might say, for example, and this is a very, very small percentage, we should make this thing optional for people who have been raped or there's incest. And so that complicates matters significantly. It really does. But if any of you have been watching Facebook feeds lately, you can just see one after the other of people who have come out and said, look, the woman said, I was raped. I decided to keep my child. And there's no way that I wouldn't do anything different. Now, I don't want to be cavalier about that at all. That's an incredibly complex thing. I'm just saying that some people make those choices, right? So, but the studies show most pregnant rape survivors choose life with no regrets. So statistically speaking, most women who have been raped, who get pregnant, which is a very, very, very small percentage, those who do, most choose to keep the child. So when people make the argument that you should justify it based on, I think it's less than 1%, that, you know, we should have the entire industry based on that less than 1%. But who get pregnant? But out of that less than 1%, the majority of them choose to keep their child. So now we're talking about a fraction of a percentage, right? Not only that, but now we're discovering that we're able to keep children long. Babies who are born prematurely are able to survive much, much longer, right? Much more successfully. My oldest brother's first marriage, their baby Aaron was born 3 months premature. She lived 6 months and then she passed away. Her lungs were not pink, that she wasn't able to process oxygen. But today at 3 months, it's not hard at all. I mean, it's difficult, but the success rate is much greater for children to survive. So that was a fascinating article to read. Some people say, I don't know, some people say, well, look, it's just my body, and whatever is in my body belongs to me. It's mine as well. Nate Watkins, who used to lead worship here, posted this on his Facebook, and I think he just says it very simply. He says, the abortion argument that is way past its shelf life, it's my body, my choice. He said, look, there are two separate heartbeats, two separate brain wave patterns, two separate sets of DNA. Clearly, it's someone else's body in there. The unspoken argument has been made this: you are inconvenient, my body matters more than yours. Having a baby is hard, no doubt, but there are wonderful agencies and support systems there to help them. Don't fall into the lie that giving a child a chance to live their life somehow deprives you of the right to live yours. It may be inconvenient, but it doesn't mean that it's robbed you of your life. So the culture has become so toxic in this debate. And not just in the United States. So many of you are familiar with the movie Unplanned. I need to tell you, I'm not a huge proponent of a lot of Christian films, just because of the art of it. I mean, I go to them, but I'm not always impressed with their production. But I just need to tell you, this was the best one I'd ever seen. And I think they worked really, really hard to make it as accurate and as honest as they possibly could. But in Canada, Canada is so, I mean, on these kinds of issues, as a pastor, in Canada, I cannot, as a pastor in Canada, I cannot give the historical, theological teaching on homosexuality, for example. I would be arrested and prosecuted and thrown into jail. On this issue in Canada, they can be pretty rabid about it as well. And so in Canada, the movie Unplanned, in the entire nation of Canada, the movie Unplanned has been banned. You're not allowed to see it in Canada. So then there was this one in the New York Times, and I think this was, this was written by Warren M. Hearn, and the title of this particular article, this is the New York Times. This is the New York Times. This is the paper that is called The Old Gray Lady. It's the paper that's supposed to have the most vaunted reputation of any newspaper in the country. And this is what they wrote. This is to their headlines. Pregnancy kills, abortion saves lives. Now, again, I'm just saying that somebody took leave of their critical thinking skills here. I'm not going to read the article. I'm just saying you look it up yourself. NPR. Now, I have a lot of friends who watch NPR, listen to NPR. And NPR presents itself as a middle-of-the-road news agency outlet that's fair and unbalanced. So here was a memo that went out to the staff at NPR. It says this: babies are not babies until they are born. So all of the staff, whenever you're interviewing or somebody or whatever, this is your take. This is what you have to say. Babies are not babies. Well, what are they, cats? I mean, what's in there? I mean, if it isn't a baby, what is it, right? Here's a professor, and I saw this meme on, it wasn't a meme, it was a picture. It said basically the same thing of a group of women on a college campus, in the grass on a college campus with a sign that basically said this. It said, the professor who labeled fetus is a legitimate parasite compared to cancer. And then they went on to say, my point was not to indoctrinate. If you're saying that's what it is, then you're indoctrinating kids. I'm sorry, but... And then it's just biologically not true. It's just not true. See, this is the wave that you and I are trying to influence and hold back and make a difference. Because look, our young women today and young men are so misinformed about this particular thing. Yes? Yeah.
Under 5%.
Yeah.
They speak about abortion, they don't talk about their other options. Uh-huh.
Yep.
I've knocked on doors for support groups for women that are looking at alternatives, and I gave brochures out on adoption, and they said, well, most of our young women aren't counseled on adoption. I said, well, now they can't be.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, do you know how many people are waiting in the wings to adopt this year alone? 2 million. You waited 2 years. There are 2 million people waiting to adopt. 2 million. But to liken, and so they showed these three or four women on a college campus with this sign that said, fetuses are not humans, they are parasites. So where are they getting this? Who's teaching this stuff, right? So just a few more. So I saw this too. There was a CNN guest, and I don't know if she was a pundit. I can't recall. But she said it very emphatically. She said, when a woman is pregnant, that is not a human being inside of her. Now, I posted on my Facebook page. It showed a picture of a infant in the womb moments before birth. And it showed the picture of the baby out of the womb, moments after birth, they look exactly the same. But that's not a human. But this is. You see what I'm saying? It's just, it's craziness, right? Now, clearly this person here has eliminated themselves from certain court decisions because Justice Ginsburg said pregnant women are not mothers. Now, when she said that publicly, and there's a court case that comes up, she has to recuse herself because she just already said what she thinks before she's heard everything, right? But a person as influential as Justice Ginsburg just recently saying that. It's pretty significant. Supreme Court in Indiana holds up abortion law regarding fetal remains to be buried or cremated. Why this is even a question, I have no idea other than this. So you understand that part of the rationale behind that what has happened with Planned Parenthood, among other organizations, is that once a child is aborted, there are things that remain that can be used. And they're trying to create an industry where people become dependent on those things. So that if you say we're not going to have any more abortions, then you remove that industry, and conceivably you take up millions of people who are dependent on that stuff that they get. That's why it's really important that the fetus remains be buried or cremated. Because we cannot allow that industry to spawn. Yeah.
And every genocide begins with convincing people that a certain group are not human.
Well, it's exactly right. So you know that I did a lot of studies. I'm glad you mentioned that. You know I did a lot of studies on genocide, Christian spirituality in the 19th century. In Germany, there was a whole industry, that cartoons that created Jews as looking subhuman. If you do the research, you'll see pictures of how Jews were depicted, and they appeared to be subhuman. They were not fully human. During the Civil War and pre-Civil War, African Americans were only like two-thirds human, so you didn't have to give them all the rights of humans. In the Rwandan genocide, where the fastest acting genocide in the history of the world, 800,000 Tutsis were annihilated in 100 days. And do you know how they were referenced every time? As cockroaches. And children in the womb are referred to as parasites. So then we have several presidential candidates who say that they would make abortion a national law. That, you know, I'm not trying to get political. I'm just saying this is what they say. This person said he would support making abortion rights federal law should it become necessary. So much for being a republic where states get to decide these kinds of things. Another one says that anti-abortion laws are against the Christian faith because, she surmises, God has given us free will. And to deny a person free will is to deny them their Christian rights. And she should not go to maybe she should go to theology school because, again, her critical thinking skills are not particularly astute. So there are other things that I could say here, and I was almost done with my. I mean, this is just a little bit. This is just a little bit of what's going on. And so I just want to say, look. The reason why this is important to talk about is because if people like you and me, look, I want to say this. Do you know that the genocide in Germany would have been impossible? So there were 16 million people who were annihilated in Germany. It would have been impossible if it had not been facilitated by people like you in this room. It was the ordinary person that facilitated all of the death of all those lives. And so, in a different kind of way, it will be the ordinary person like you that will save the lives of the children who are being woven and fashioned in the womb in the image of God. It'll be people like you. And you might be saying, well, what can I do? I'm just a single person. Well, I've used this illustration before. I'll say it again. So there's this big storm in the ocean. And waves came thundering in on the beach again and again all night long. And the storm went away. And walking down the beach was this little boy. And all across the beach were these starfish that had been pushed up onto the beach by the storm surge. And each time as he was walking along the beach, he would bend down, he'd pick up a starfish, and he'd throw it back in the water. And coming toward him was an older man. And he saw this little boy just walking down, picking up a starfish. I mean, the beach was covered. But he'd pick up a starfish, he'd throw it in the water. As the man approached him, he said, what are you doing? He said, I'm just walking down the beach. If I see a starfish, I'll throw it in the water, saving it. And he said, Do you see all these starfish? You can't possibly hope to make a difference. The little boy bent down again. He picked up a starfish and he threw it in the water. And he said, it made a difference to that one. So I'm saying to you, that woman who is pregnant, who doesn't know what to do, you talk to her. You help her. You offer to be there. If you haven't adopted, maybe you should consider adoption. A child that may need to be adopted. I mean, there are a whole host of ways, as our guest shared with you, that we can make a difference in our own sort of way. Look, remember, it's not the Christian's job to be successful. It's the Christian's job to be faithful. That's our job, to be faithful. So ask yourself, in what way can you be faithful? So I'm going to say, I have no idea how much money is in the missions budget, but I'm just saying, go out and buy a bunch of baby bottles, about 40 or 50 of them. Okay, give us 40 or 50 baby bottles. We will give them to the 40 or 50 families who make up our church, and we will ask them to take them home and just to throw their loose change in there for the next, say, 6 months. Just throw your loose change in there. Then we will give you that money. Okay? So that's, oh, 1 month, okay. Well, I was thinking maybe a gallon-sized baby bottle or something like that. But, yeah. Anyway, well, look, here's the thing. We are people who not only talk about the God who gives life, we are the people who are supposed to emanate life. And it is a holy calling that we have been given. And so when we participate in the Lord's Supper this morning, we are participating in a covenant. We are participating in a thing where God, who sacrificed his son, Jesus Christ, on our behalf, who shed his blood on our behalf to give us life, and that more abundantly. When we participate in the blood of Jesus Christ, it's in remembrance of that. And so as believers then, we have this responsibility to convey, to shine the life and the love of Christ in our lives in every way, including to and for and on behalf of this demographic group. And so as you come forward this morning, we ask that you would prayerfully consider how your life can be used to protect and to nurture and care for the most innocent and the most helpless among us. There is no human being more innocent and more helpless than the unborn child in a woman's womb. It's a great calling, and I hope that you will join with me in that way.